If you enjoy the show and you feel like you're benefiting from it, please support me on Patreon. It's patreon.com/Mance Rayder. I just added a $2 level, which allows you to get early episodes. Also on freemanbeyondthewall.com/store. I have the same levels as Patreon listed on there, but you can do it by the year, and you can do it for cryptocurrency, or you can do it for fiat. Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. I want to welcome you to the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. This is your host, Pete Quinones. I invited Jim Bovard to return to the show. Jim writes for USA Today. He writes for The Hill sometimes. If there is a newspaper out there or a magazine, he has written an article for it. Jim has also authored 10 books. I invited Jim on today to talk about an article he wrote for the Daily Caller called Richard Jewell, Carter Page, and the Illusion of the FBI's Power and Competence. So he's going to talk a lot about the FBI, the recent IG report, the 1996 bombing in Atlanta that was blamed on Richard Jewell, that the FBI perpetrated that lie. He's going to talk about the subsequent investigation and search for Eric Rudolph, who was the one who did it, and how he actually ended up in the middle of that. And then we're going to talk about what Virginia is looking to do with going and taking people's guns and actually going after sheriffs who refuse to do it. So without any further delay, here is Jim Bovard. Jim Bovard, how you doing today?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on, Pete.
Oh, yeah, no problem, man. After I've been wanting to have you back on because it's been over a year, probably like a year and a half since the last time you were on. And recently I actually, during the Thanksgiving week, I took that interview that we did and re-released it, and people loved it. When the first time I released it, my audience wasn't nearly as big as it is now. And yeah, people pretty much went crazy for it. So,
that's right. That's great. Well, it's fine work you do. I'm glad you've got a much bigger audience because you deserve it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I try as hard as I can to get people to read everything that you write and everything that I can possibly share on social media of yours, because I think everything that you write is just beneficial, and that it's information that people need to know.
That's not what my editors say.
All right. So Thanks. This one, no problem. So this article is in the Daily Caller, and I love the title of the article because it's so timely considering this movie that just came out. So Richard Jewell, Carter Page, and the Illusion of the FBI's Power and Competence. So let's just start off right from the beginning. There was an IG report that came down talking about FBI misconduct in the investigation and the whole Russiagate thing. So do you want to start off talking about that and exactly what they found that they were doing wrong?
Yeah, well, you know, I'll just turn the clock back a little bit. I mean, people have been ragging on me for being cynical about the FBI for about 25 years, ever since I started writing about Waco and Ruby Ridge. It's funny because the first story I did for the Wall Street Journal on Ruby Ridge, I got a response from the FBI director Louis Freeh that directly attacked me in the article. 6 months later, there was a confidential Justice Department report that came out that proved that Freeh had greatly misstated the facts. The FBI was culpable, and the feds had to pay a big settlement to the Weaver family survivors shortly afterwards. Here we are, turn the clock ahead almost 25 years. You know, for the last couple of years, we've been hearing that we got to trust the FBI. There were people, making prayer candles for Mueller, people wearing, Comey's picture on their shirt, Mueller's picture on their shirt. And then the inspector general comes out last week and blows the FBI out of the water, proving that the FBI had deceived the FISA court to gain these nuclear-powered search warrants to go after the Trump campaign officials. I mean, this is a complete travesty of democracy. Folks were talking about threats to the election. Well, you got the FBI coming in and spying on a political campaign and doing it illegally and dishonestly. And I'm glad the facts finally came out, and There's about 12,000 media reports that need to be corrected, but I'm not holding my breath.
They usually bury those on like page 29 if they do them at all.
If they do them at all, yeah.
Yeah. So you connected, you started off talking about the whole Carter Page thing, and, you know, I guess the most obvious thing was that Carter Page was a CIA informant. He would go talk to these Russians and inform back to the CIA, and the FBI changed that.
Yes. I mean, that's how the FBI got the search warrant. I mean, you had an FBI lawyer who intentionally falsified that information in the search warrant. But there was so much other BS in the search warrant application. And, you know, based on the Steele dossier, which was piss quality, to be blunt, but it was good enough for government work. And it was good enough for the, for the rubber stamps in the FISA court. And, you know, you would think if the FISA court had brains or balls that, you know, that they would, have a higher level of scrutiny on a request to spy on a person tied to a presidential campaign. Apparently not.
Well, yeah, the FISA court in the past couple of days, I see, is trying to play CYA. And this is a court, I believe, that has given out over 8,000 or is it 28,000? I can't even remember the amount of search of warrants over the years. And they say, and Comey actually said on his interview with Chris Wallace the other day, that it's really hard to get a FISA warrant, where I think I read a number that said they've only turned down 29 in their whole history.
Yeah, the FISA court has approved over 30 or 40,000 warrants. 99.9% approval of the warrants which are requested by the feds. And it's, it's a secret court. So, and the judges only hear the government. So the government comes in and say, hey, you know, we'd like to spy on this person. Okay. So, you know, it's a farce of a court. It's got farcical procedures. And they've been kowtowing forever, and they've been pissing and moaning about FBI lying to them since at least 2001, 2002, and it goes on.
So you, I guess in the article you wanted to show that, you know, this isn't something new with them, and you brought up this new movie, this new Clint Eastwood movie that debuted last Friday about Richard Jewell. And, there might be some people who are so young listening to this, they don't know who Richard Jewell is or really know the story. So what happened with that? 1996 Olympics right here in Atlanta.
Yeah, Richard Jewell was a security guard working at the Olympic site, at the Olympic Park, I think that's what they called it. And he noticed a suspicious bag, package, whatever, and sounded the alert and got people scattered away from that, and turned out to be a pipe bomb that would have killed a lot of people except for, Richard Jewell paying attention, sounding the alarm. FBI decided, there was a brief period where Jewell was hailed as a hero for that. Then the FBI decided, well, you know, we think he's guilty. So the FBI talked to journalists who proceeded to smear him on the front page and every place else as the actual bomber, and basically a total fraud. And there were journalists who were, there were journalists who just took it on faith that the FBI would never give them wrong information. And some of those outlets had to pay very large settlements for defamation later on.
Well, there was an AJC journalist, I believe, Kathy Scruggs, who apparently a lot of people are upset that she's being portrayed in the movie as somebody who slept with an FBI agent to get the story. But apparently, from what you're saying, she didn't need to. They were more than willing to feed the journalists information, wrong information about Jewell.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the media focus on the on that detail as far as Kathy Scruggs. I don't know what she did or didn't do, but she sure as hell screwed Richard Jewell. Part of what was appalling on this was that Jewell was dragged through the dirt for 88 days, and the FBI knew long before the end of that he was innocent. But, you know, but they didn't fess up to their mistake.
Yeah. And I didn't really start following politics very closely, you know, or really realize how corrupt the media was until 2007, 2008. And I moved to the Atlanta area in 2005. And it wasn't until I moved to the Atlanta area in 2005 and learned about the name Eric Rudolph that I found out that Richard Jewell had nothing to do with that. I mean, I was walking around for 9 years thinking, oh yeah, Richard Jewell did that, because that's what the media fed. And then, you know, it was such a big deal. And then when, oh, it didn't happen. You know, they didn't correct themselves. They didn't go out of their way to correct themselves. Like, they went out of their way to demonize the guy.
Yeah, it was more like, never mind. There were people I've talked to in the last week who said, well, wasn't he the person that did the bombing? And I'm thinking, holy crap. He was vilified, and there was far more press coverage for vilifying him or for Jay Leno joking about him, mocking him, than there was for the correction. But, by the time he died at age 44, 2007. New York Times obituary was headlined, Richard Jewell, hero of Atlanta attack, dies. But that was only after the FBI and the media had effectively destroyed him.
Hey, I want to tell you about the Lions of Liberty podcast. They are a libertarian variety show that has 3 episodes per week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Monday is the flagship show where Mark Claire interviews libertarian personalities. On Wednesdays, we have Electric Liberty Land with Brian McWilliams, where he explores comedy, culture, and liberty. And on Friday, you have John Odermatt with Felony Friday, looking at the broken criminal justice system. So head on over to Lions of Liberty, and you can check out one of my favorite podcasts. So apparently in the investigation you were talking about of Jewell, where they demonized him, Free, this gentleman who attacked you over your reporting on Ruby Ridge, came out and said that he had instructed his FBI agents not to use deceptive tactics. Well, what kind of tactics did they use to try and get him to fess up to something he didn't do?
Yeah, so what the FBI did was lure Richard Jewell to their Atlanta office and ask him to help them make a training film about detecting bombs. And by doing that, the FBI agents could question Jewell for a long time without having to read him any warning that his rights might be violated, a Miranda warning. So it was a Justice Department investigation which said that basically violated Jewell's rights. Louis Free, FBI chief, testified to the Senate. He was asked about that, and he said, you know, that they didn't really violate anybody's rights because he wasn't guilty. So who wasn't, you know? So apparently the FBI thinks that only guilty people have constitutional rights. But there were so many layers of BS on this. Typical.
Well, you wrote that by 2001, Eric Rudolph, who ended up being the bomber, he also did some bombings around here, a lesbian nightclub, abortion clinics.
He was a bad guy, yeah.
Yeah, he was a real bad guy. And he actually turned into a folk hero. I remember seeing a bumper sticker that said, run Rudolph, run.
Oh, that's a riot. I've not seen those. And, you know, I guess I wouldn't see them here in Montgomery County.
Yeah. But, so they were searching for him in the North Carolina hills and mountains, and you actually stumbled into the, how did you stumble upon this whole case?
So, as always in my life, I'm an innocent victim, you know. I did nothing wrong. So I was vacationing in the mountains of Western North Carolina, summer of 2001, and my spouse at that time, she had this bright idea of going to some damn chalet inn she'd read about that was way back in the mountains. Well, tour guidebook had lousy directions, and we're roaming around that zip code, you know, can't find the darn thing. So I finally pulled into a hardware store to cuss and check the map. I stepped out of the cigar, fired up a cheap cigar, just stand there puffing. A couple minutes later, this big old bald guy comes bounding out of the hardware store and asking in a booming voice, what part of Maryland you from? I says, Rockville. So he starts chatting me up at a quick pace, telling me he was from Maryland, been living down there for 20 years, worked as a long-haul truck driver. Last year he lost $5,000 gambling at the casino nearby. You know, I was raised in the mountains of Virginia, and I'm kind of used to how mountain folks talk, but something seemed wrong on this. And after about 15 minutes, this guy suddenly announced that he thought I was an undercover federal agent.
Why did you think that?
Well, yeah, I was thinking, you know, holy shit. Here I am, like a scruffy beard, railroad cap, my country boy shtick. Federal agencies often assume I'm just a harmless redneck. And here I am. It turns out the rednecks think I'm a Fed. So I asked this guy, so why do you think I'm an undercover agent? He says, because you're driving a black car with Maryland license plates. And I said, yeah, okay. So I don't think Ford Contours were standard undercover issue. I said, well, are there any other signs you can tell if someone's a federal agent? He says, yeah, all of them have got hidden tracking devices on the underside back of their car. So I says, yeah, go ahead and check it out. Okay. So he and I walk back to the back of my vehicle. He gets down his knees. He paws his big old hands under that Ford. Didn't find anything. After about 2 minutes, he gets up, satisfied I'm not a G-man, gives me a big hearty handshake. And so I was, you know, trying to figure out where the hell did this accusation come from? He explained that the FBI had sent hundreds of agents to that area to capture Eric Rudolph a couple years earlier. FBI got there. They were full of bluster. Their best and the brightest are going to find Rudolph real quick. This guy said that a lot of his neighbors came to despise the FBI because they were so heavy-handed and condescending. This guy told me that some of the restaurants down there refused to serve FBI agents. They were so pissed off at them.
And weren't they like taking over motels too and like kicking people out and
yeah.
things like that?
Yeah, that was what this guy, his name was Dennis, said that the FBI had done. And I was checking, when I was writing this article last week, I was doing a little online checking on this and to see what else had happened. And there was a lot of good stories. A local magazine said the FBI had bloodhounds, helicopters, all these hidden cameras, couldn't find nothing, even though they put $1 million bounty on Rudolph's head. The LA Times said that Rudolph became a folk hero. There were posters, bumper stickers, signs that said Eric Rudolph ate here and Eric Rudolph 1998 hide and seek champion.
So it looks like they thought that they were going to these FBI agents, probably most of them who maybe from, you know, big city or farm country. I don't know
New
how
Jersey.
Many mountains. Yeah. New Jersey kind of people thought that they were going to go into the mountains where I assume there's a rifle hiding behind every rock, and that they were just going to find this guy who had been up there for a few years and, basically set up shop.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, it's supposed to be a pretty area. We'll see some nice mountains. There was a spokesman for the federal task force with the FBI agents, told the papers at that point, you know, this is incredibly difficult. You can't see squat. There are all of a sudden cliffs and rocks. You could get shot or blown up. It's hot as hell during the day and cold as hell at night. And once you're in the woods, all bets are off. This is a guy who plants bombs and you're on his turf. The poor darlings.
Yeah. How did he end up getting caught?
He was scavenging at in a small town about an hour away from where that hardware store was, and a local policeman caught him.
Oh wow! He must have been hailed as a hero.
He was. I don't think he got the $1 million. It maybe did. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to think of the FBI wasting money.
Why don't you talk a little bit about what's going on up in Virginia? I mean, I know you live in Maryland now, right?
I live in Maryland. I was raised in Virginia. I was actually down in Virginia last weekend, down the area about 300 miles from D.C. and down in Pulaski County. I was at a Shoney's for breakfast on Sunday morning, and there was a big movement for Second Amendment sanctuary counties. I think well over half the counties in Virginia have voted to become Second Amendment sanctuaries. because the Democrats took over the state legislature. There's a Democratic governor. They're talking about putting in all these new gun control laws, banning this, banning that. You gotta register everything except your toothbrush. And, you know, if you head back to these, you know, the back hills, backwoods of Virginia, I was, you know, last Saturday night, I was down at a Walmart, you know, looking around their hunting section, and a lot of serious hunters there. And, you know, these are guys I would not want to have an argument with. And it's kind of funny, you know, you have a lot of these new Democratic legislators in Virginia who learned everything that they knew about guns from NPR and the Washington Post. And they think that they can pass a law and that they can just maybe send some big trucks out to Pulaski County and Withville and, you know, Bristol and just have everybody load up their AR-15s to take back for lockup in Richmond. It's like, it ain't gonna happen. And it would be most unfortunate and unwise if those folks did try to go in and seize anybody's guns. There was talk about some politician was saying, well, you know, we'll have to send the National Guard in. It's like, okay, this is, okay, first of all, this person doesn't know the people they'd be targeting. And second, you don't know the National Guard. And third, how many people is it worth dying for? There's another wrinkle here, and that is, you know, some of the Democrats are talking about how they've got to do this to reduce violence. You know, the rural areas of Virginia are not where most of the homicides are happening. They're happening in a handful of urban areas. The homicide rate in Pulaski County is probably, you know, at least 50 to 80% lower than it is in Richmond or Petersburg. But those are not the areas that are going to be targeted by this. I mean, from what the Democrats are saying, how they're sounding, this has more to do with hatred of gun owners than it does any concern about violence.
Well, I mean, I was reading something yesterday, and it was actually on a law enforcement website, and they were talking about how there was a couple towns who were calling up militia.
Yep.
Where they're just like, well, I mean, if they're going to do this and if the National Guard's going to do this, we need a militia to protect, and they're doing it explicitly to protect, they said protect local law enforcement, because local law enforcement is in the crosshair. Now, we know, like, you know, Scott Horton says, you know, Waco, you know, should have been handled by local police.
You know, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a simple search warrant. You get a search warrant. You know, the sheriff knew David Koresh. You knock on the door, David, I got me a search warrant here. Okay. You know.
So, you know, this is all going back to, you know, how local you can get things. And it seems like, you know, these sheriffs who, one sheriff said he would deputize the whole town, which would make it legal for, you know, everyone to own firearms or own rifles. But it looks like these militias are really there to protect local law enforcement and local sheriffs who would probably be the targets of the National Guard.
You know, I have to wonder what some of these politicians in Richmond have been smoking, because it makes no sense at all. And if you look at the map of the areas that have declared themselves sanctuary cities, it's a large majority. It's probably at least 80% of the geographical area of the state. And it's not like you can invite, you know, the National Guard from Jersey and New York to come in and help us conquer Pulaski County. There'd be all kinds of violence. And if the government, if the law enforcement or the military, whatever, did come in and start trying to seize guns, there would be fatalities. It would escalate. It'd work out very badly for the people trying to grab guns. I mean, these are, you know, this would be very difficult terrain to go into. I mean, there's a line in the Blue Ridge Classic song about the revenuer who went up Rocky Top Mountain and he never came down. And if the politicians in Richmond, if the feds want to try to enforce these kind of laws, it's not going to work. You're going to get innocent people killed, and things could quickly spiral out of control.
We know that a lot of things that happen state on the state level are testing grounds for what would happen nationally, like, you know, how the universal health care in California and so many things. You know, seatbelt laws were first in California and then it was all over the place. Do you see this as like they're like a petri dish kind of thing to see what it would be like if they wanted to do this on the national level?
I don't know. I mean, there are a number of other states like New York and New Jersey and California that have enacted sweeping bans or registration requirements for AR-15s, for instance. And I think the rate of compliance is roughly about, you know, 3 or 4%. Most of the gun owners have simply ignored them. Most of the sheriffs in rural areas in those states have also ignored them, because the sheriffs have got other concerns. They've got some real violent people and they don't need to worry about, you know, some hunter. And, you know, the state of Virginia has a long history of resistance to the federal government. Okay, it hasn't done so well the last 150 years, but aside from that, I would assume that the politicians in Richmond are going to back down on this because it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it makes, you know, it's a way for them to get headlines in the Washington Post and some of the, to get invited on CNN or MSNBC. But if you actually want to try and carry out, gun confiscation laws in the mountains of Virginia, it's not going to work. You're going to get people killed for no good reason.
I know that you write for the USA Today, and you're writing to a quote-unquote mainstream audience. And, you know, you can't really write about radical minarchism or even anarchism, anarcho-capitalism, anything like that.
Hey, I'm a moderate.
You're a moderate. Do you think there's any, these people who are holding on to the idea that if we just go back to the Constitution and follow the Constitution, you know, we'll have more liberty, we'll be able to, you know, put that, tame the federal police force or even get rid of it and go back to state and local. I mean, do you see any hope that that could ever happen as large as this Leviathan has grown?
Well, it sounded like you were not watching the floor debate in the House of Representatives today. Almost every single Democrat talked about how he or she loved the Constitution. So obviously there's all kinds of support for the Constitution. There's a wonderful old line, the Constitution isn't perfect, but it's better than what we got now. And I think, well, that's obviously true. I don't know. I don't have a good recipe for rolling back the federal government, the excessive federal power right now. If people had more respect for the Constitution, it would help. You look at the FISA court and how they've just, you know, there were so many wonderful things that Edward Snowden publicized, secret documents, and some of them were the FISA court documents. And you had this secret court that basically created a parallel constitution, but it was a mini constitution with almost invisible rights as far as the Fourth Amendment protects from search and seizures. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't see a good recipe for being able to rein in big government at this point. But then again, there's a lot of people thinking about a lot of principled folks, a lot of courageous folks, and it's good to see so many people pushing back.
When you look at how separate and just how much a certain section of the left hates a certain section of the right, where the only reason they want control over, you know, the White House or the legislature, the judiciary, is so that they can punish the other side. Doesn't it just seem like the logical solution to this would be divorce? Would be to break it all up, to decentralize it, to you go your way, I go my way? Or are we just, am I asking for too much because there's so much hate and venom in these groups?
Well, I'd certainly hate to see the San Francisco politicians go astray. That's a better recipe for peace and, peaceful coexistence, what we have now. I mean, peaceful coexistence should be the goal, not everybody marching in the right direction. And that's something you understand. That's a lot of your listeners understand. But, the whole idea that not everybody has to, have the same seatbelt or drive the same speed or this, that, or the other. I mean, there are so many Americans who think that we've got to, have this mold. But yeah, there's a lot of hatred there, and, to break things up would make, to find a way that the people who have the most hatred don't also capture the most power, that would be good.
That's really all I got, man. It's
all right.
Yeah. So, all right. What do you got to plug?
Oh hell, JimBovard.com got a bunch of articles and got some books there. If people enjoy the story about me being accused of being an undercover federal agent, they might also enjoy Public Policy Hooligan, a memoir about some of the mischief that I did in earlier times and some of the people that hated me. There's other books, there's other stuff, and but something I want to say is it's great work y'all are doing. I'm really glad to see the Libertarian Institute thriving, and I'm glad you're getting a much bigger following as a radio interviewer because you deserve it.
I appreciate it, Jim. Thank you so much, and keep writing those articles, man, and I'll keep sharing them.
Hey, thanks a lot.
All right, take care.
You too.
I want to thank you for tuning into the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. I want to thank Jim for coming on. That's it. Be back in a few days with another episode. Take care and bye.